Hey there, what is up, Jazz Nation? It's been a minute. How you been? I hope your month is going really well. My name is Brian Gonzalez, and thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of All That Jazz, the podcast made by the fans for the fans. If you haven't been able to tell by the music, it is just me today. I am riding solo. I know it's been a little bit since we've been on, about 2 weeks. There wasn't really a lot to talk about, but now there is. The NBA schedule got released yesterday. Dante Exum says he's 100%. The Jazz bench also has been rated number one. But since we were last on, the number one topic in the NBA to talk about is, of course, Russell Westbrook signing a 3-year max extension to stay in Oklahoma City. So what does that mean exactly for the landscape of the West? Well, I don't know. First off, it's awesome for Oklahoma City. They get to keep their star. He does the exact opposite of what Kevin Durant did, and he's going to stick around. So that's great for Oklahoma City. I'm happy for them, kind of, because I always just in the back of my mind wish they were still the Supersonics, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers. And the interesting thing is he gets a big pay bump. So the witchcraft that is cap management, he gets an $8 million pay increase this year, this upcoming year, and then will be obviously maxed out the next year. But hidden in that 3-year max extension is a player option. So he really is just adding one more year on to the current contract that he has. And then he has the option to do this all over again. And the interesting thing is that it actually kind of makes him more tradable. So I think what he said is, okay, you know, I want to stick around, but, you know, you've got to prove that you can build a team around me that can contend. Because right now, as they're currently situated, I think with Westbrook staying, they are going to probably make the playoffs. I think they have enough talent to, but I don't see them being a contender. I think I see them being anywhere from 6 to 8. I mean, maybe 5, but probably 6 to 8 in that kind of range. And the funny thing is it kind of actually works out really well for the Jazz. And that's because we actually get their first round pick next year. So if they, and that's actually lottery protected. So if they were going to just stink and completely rebuild, then we more than likely wouldn't have gotten that pick. But now that Westbrook stays and they more than likely will make the playoffs the next 2 years, as long as he's still around, then the Jazz are going to end up with that pick, which is just awesome. Just another tool for Dennis Lindsay to use to continue improving the talent on the Jazz. But overall, I think it's a good deal both ways. The Thunder still get to have a competitive team. Westbrook pretty much saves face, and at the same time, he still has all the options that he really wants. So if things go south in a hurry, they can trade him, and the new contract makes him more tradable because it guarantees that he will be there for at least 2 years wherever he is. So yeah, I mean, it's a really cool contract, I think, or good move, cool move. And I think the best part about this is it makes the Northwest Division, I think, the most competitive division in all of basketball, because you have the Thunder, the Portland Trail Blazers, the up and coming Minnesota Timberwolves, the Utah Jazz, and then, I mean, the Nuggets are there, but they're kind of not there. So you have four playoff teams that are very closely matched. I think the Jazz are the best team there. I think the Jazz should still win that division, but that's going to be a fantastically competitive division to watch. And I'm very, very, very excited to see what happens. Like I said, I think the Jazz are probably more talented right now. Their current, with the way the Thunder's current roster is, I bet you they probably start Westbrook, Oladipo, Anthony Morrow. Here's where it gets interesting. They could either go Enes Kanter or Ilyasova, probably right here at the four spot. And then probably Steven Adams at the five. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see how Billy Donovan can get that team to gel. But, you know, hey, good for Oklahoma City. They're not going to go completely in the tank like Cleveland did when LeBron left. So, yeah, good for them. But on the biggest news that happened actually yesterday was the NBA released their schedule. So the Jazz schedule is up. It's online. David Locke did a really, really good write-up on UtahJazz.com. It just kind of goes through, he gives you the bullet points for the Jazz schedule. And it's a really good read. He kind of just points out, where the important parts of the schedule really kind of are. The Jazz are actually going to open. So the first night of the NBA season is October 25th. And that's a night the Jazz usually don't play, but they actually are going to open in Portland that day, which will be a good test. They opened against Portland this year and Portland kind of took it to them. So I hope the Jazz kind of go after and get revenge and start off on the right foot. And then the home opener will be Friday, October 28th against the Lakers. It'll be the first time they haven't had Kobe in what, 20 years. So the new look Lakers, I guess. Personally, I think they're still going to be really bad. That's just me. And then you look through the rest of the schedule, and I've said this before, I think the Jazz are going to be between 50 to 55 wins. And you look at the schedule and I absolutely think it's 100% possible. They are, again, not doing their former traditional or annual pre-Christmas road trip. That instead they are going on a 7-day, 5-game trip in November. And then they have another one in January. And you look at those and it's not as crazy as in years past. That first trip, I want to say, I'm going to look it up right here. It goes, so the first trip, they start in New York, Philly, should be 2 wins. Charlotte, probably a win. Magic, probably a win. And the Heat, they obviously should win. They'll probably drop one or two of those just because that's how long road trips work. But those are all winnable games. So, I mean, last year, I believe they had a crazy hard road trip. And I think they split that one, actually. So, I don't know. I see those as win. They should win those games, but just the nature of it being such a long road trip, they'll probably drop one of those, one or two, hopefully just one. And then the next one in January, let's skip ahead to that one. That one goes Brooklyn, Boston, Toronto, Minnesota, Memphis. So that one's much harder. And that one, you hope to win more than you lose because it's 5 games. If you can go 3-2 in that, even 2-3 on that kind of a road trip, I think that's a victory. So other than that, they don't really have a ton of crazy scheduling conflicts. They have tough teams in a row, but nothing like insane travel. They do play the Cavaliers after that last road trip. They do play the Cavaliers and then Detroit at home. So not 2 pushovers after that. Obviously LeBron coming in on January 10th. That's something that the Jazz always get up for. LeBron hasn't won in Salt Lake in forever, it seems. I know I could look that up. I know it's been a very, very long time since LeBron has won in Salt Lake. So the Delta Center for sure will be rocking for that game. That's one of the key games, January 10th. The other one was actually, I think December 5th. Yes. No, not December 5th. Where is it? December 8th. I'm sorry. December 8th is when the circus is going to roll into town with the Golden State Warriors, and the Jazz actually only play the Warriors 3 times this year. So that is one you for sure are going to want to be at, and Salt Lake will be rocking for that because I just have a feeling it's going to be a titanic matchup because the Jazz should be sitting in good shape come December. Any other notes I had on? Something that I thought was very interesting. So coming towards the very end of the tail end of the schedule for the Jazz is actually kind of difficult. It might be the most, probably the most difficult part of the Jazz schedule is actually the very end in March and April. So let's see, where does it kind of start? So let's see. Wizards, Spurs, Blazers, T-Wolves, Blazers, Golden State, Spurs. So you have the Spurs twice, the Blazers twice, and the T-Wolves and Warriors once, all to close out the season. That's difficult, but fortunately the Jazz have shown that they can really close strong, and hopefully at that point they will have an idea of what they're playing for. So I don't know. It's a difficult way to the end of the year, but hopefully by that point the Jazz are rolling and it doesn't really matter. This is the biggest thing I think the Jazz need to do is get over that San Antonio hump. The Spurs have just had our number since Carl and John left, and this is the year I feel like the Jazz really need to break through. If they can split the series this year with the Spurs, that would be just fantastic. I think that would be just do wonders for their confidence, because I think you look at the overall talent on each roster, I think the Jazz have more talent than the Spurs. It's just they're incredibly well coached and they have the Jazz number. It's just one of those things. But you look at the talent, I think the Jazz can break through this year, and I really hope it's this year. And at least split it with the Spurs. They need to get over that hump of them just losing to the Spurs every single opportunity. So yeah, I think that's kind of my big notes on the schedule. Like I said, I still think the Jazz are going to end up somewhere between 50 and 55 wins. You look at the schedule, there's not really a stretch where you see, oh, we could drop, you know, 4 or 5 games in a row right here until maybe the very end of the season. And even then, I don't think it's going to be, you know, a big losing streak. So yeah, that's my thoughts on the schedule. Single game tickets aren't on sale yet, but when they do, you're for sure going to want to go jump on that Golden State and Cavaliers game. The arena is for sure going to be just going crazy that night. Another bit of Jazz news that was pretty big was an interview. Dante Exum says he is 100% good to go, and that should just be music to Jazz fans' ears, and you should just be singing your praises to the sky, because I mean, it shouldn't really be a surprise, because it's been over a year since his ACL injury, and ACL rehabilitations have actually gotten a lot better just in these last, you know, 5 years. You saw, I mean, I know he's not really human, but Adrian Peterson in the NFL in a collision sport like that, he came back in 6 months, I think, from an ACL tear. So I think Jazz fans should, you know, obviously you want to temper your expectations of him coming into the year, but physically he should be 100%. You shouldn't see any rust at all, at least physically. Where you need to temper your expectations is, you know, how he looks on the floor, how he interacts with the team, and how he just kind of flows in the game, I guess, because it's been a year since he's played. And with him being so young, it, you know, it could take a little bit of time, you know, a couple weeks maybe. But the thing is you look at Dante. I mean, George Hill, I think, was the biggest addition to the Jazz, because he immediately gives them a starting point guard that they haven't had in years. And I think George Hill probably is probably one of the most crucial pieces. But there's a big but on this. If Dante comes back and, you know, starts where he left off and only continues to get better, the Jazz are going to be so ridiculously scary. Because not only if is, you know, sitting and watching, if Dante can process the game a bit better just from, you know, having a year off to just sit and study, and then you add his athleticism and his length on the floor, the Jazz are so stupidly scary. I think the Jazz are scary anyway, but if Dante kind of can, you know, make some real strides and progress and start to be more aggressive on the floor, it's going to be ridiculous. I mean, you look at the tail end of his rookie year and Dante gave, excuse me, he gave elite point guards real problems. And it's not just his size, but he's really, really, really quick. Now, you know, when you say someone's an elite athlete, a lot of people kind of want to point to someone like a Russell Westbrook or a Zach LaVine. Dante's not that kind of athlete. He doesn't explode vertically like those guys do. But what he does is he has those quick twitch muscles to where he is so fast laterally that he can stay in front of anybody. And then you add his 6'6 height and his wingspan on there. And that's just a ridiculous, that's like a prototypical defender. Because he can really switch 1 through 3 and not have any problem at all. So you're going to add that onto a team that's already very good defensively, and the Jazz are going to absolutely smother people. And it's kind of interesting. We as Jazz fans have been so accustomed to being under the radar that now all of a sudden the spotlight is on us, and it's kind of like you go, how do I handle this? I don't really understand. So I mean, that's Utah in general, just the players also. There's going to be a magnifying glass on them now that really none of them have played with. And I'm excited with a dash of, you know, cautiousness, because this is something that we really haven't dealt with in Utah in a very, very long time. There haven't been expectations like this. There hasn't been pressure like this. And, you know, I think the veterans are there at the right time to kind of deal with this. I mean, you have Boris Diaw, you know, George Hill, both guys that have made pretty good runs in the playoffs. I mean, George Hill has played in a Eastern Conference Finals, and Boris Diaw has a couple championships with the Spurs. So, and then you obviously have Joe Johnson, who's, I don't think he's made big runs in the playoffs, but he's at least won a round. He's not Tracy McGrady. I believe he's been in the second round, but I think those guys are going to be really, really critical in helping the younger guys kind of deal with expectations and not really worry about that and kind of get your head down and just get on with the job. So, I'm very excited. The season, you know, with the schedule getting released, it's kind of, you wish the season was a little bit closer, but it's actually not that far. I mean, you think about that. Preseason is going to start at the beginning of October, and we're almost halfway through August right now. So what, a month and a half till preseason starts. So, you know, it's creeping up on us. And, you know, me as a Jazz fan, I'm super happy that Dante's ready to go, you know, 100%. And I'm looking forward to see, you know, how he looks, because the Jazz front office is like so sold on him. Anytime you hear anything about Dante Exum from the front office, it's just glowing reviews and they just love him. And so, you know, considering Dennis Lindsay really hasn't missed talent wise on somebody yet, I mean, you just can't help but be super excited for what he's going to be. And, you know, on that, we should actually talk about the Jazz bench, because they have been rated by multiple websites, I believe, the biggest one probably being CBS, that the Jazz bench is actually rated number one in the NBA. And now, as I was saying before, that's, you know, that's very high expectations. That they're saying it's better than the Golden State Warriors. They're saying it's better than the Spurs, etc. That's real high praise on a national level, something that the Jazz are not used to. And the starters were actually ranked number 5. So there you go. There's some eyeballs on Salt Lake City. And if you look at that, that's basically, that's them saying the Jazz are contenders, which, you know, we've been saying here on All That Jazz for a while, but you know, okay, that's me tooting my own horn, but I'll take it because we've seen this since they've been making the moves and now it's just kind of getting noticed and getting attention. The Jazz are scary. They're really, really scary. You have Dante Exum with, I mean, if he gives you just what he gave you at the end of his rookie year, that is enough to be a very, very good backup point guard. And you know, in certain situations, you put him in with the starters to close out a game in real defensive situations, you know, his length, his speed. But I think Dante's going to improve pretty rapidly as he gets more comfortable in the offense. He's not going to have a lot of pressure on him because of another addition, Boris Diaw. Boris Diaw actually is like, you look at the stats from the Olympics right now, he's like sixth in assists as a big man, as a 4 or 5. If you want a preview of what you're going to get this year, you need to be watching the French national team because Boris Diaw is just setting people up and getting looks for Rudy at the rim. He's getting looks for, you know, Nicholas Batum in the corner. He's making things so much easier for the rest of his team. If you want a preview, just turn on a French national team game during the Olympics and you're going to get excited. You're going to get very, very excited. So the pressure is not all going to be on Dante in the second unit. You're going to have Diaw there to help move the ball. Alec is an underrated passer. Here's one thing about Alec Burks that I've heard quite a bit. People think that he is just kind of an ISO. I mean, maybe a lesser version of Joe Johnson, even just an ISO get to the rim kind of a guy. And yes, that's what he's done and he's done well, but you also got to remember that he has not really been in a favorable position to do what he does and excel at what he does because he's actually a pretty good passer. Like he finds people a lot, but he hasn't had a lot of talent around him because he's only really started, you know, what, like 40 games maybe in his career. I need to look that up, but the talent around him has not been all that great. And so he's, you know, you give him the ball with 8 seconds on the shot clock. Of course, he's going to go to the rim because he's really good at it. And if he can start getting some calls, that would be lovely. I've never seen somebody, him and Gordon Hayward, get to the rim quite a bit and do not get calls. And it's really, really frustrating as a fan. I mean, I know that you guys at home watch the games and you see that just like I do. I mean, Alec Burks gets hammered and I don't under, and so does Gordon Hayward. And I have no idea why he does not get calls. So, I mean, you listen to somebody like, I mean, I know David Locke has brought up a lot of stats that Alec Burks is not good at the rim. It's because he gets hit a lot at the rim. He's a fantastic finisher, but if he gets hit a lot and doesn't get calls, of course his percentages isn't going to look good. You go back and you watch the games. It's just kind of, I don't understand how there's so much contact and he doesn't get calls. Yes, I'm complaining, 2 months before the season starts. So if any NBA officials hear this, let's get our act together. If James Harden can throw himself into people and get calls, if Alec Burks goes to the rim and gets hammered and doesn't get a call, that's garbage. That's garbage. So I'm really hoping that he can get just some, you know, just some calls, not all the calls, just some. And you'll see his effectiveness really spike. And then I also think that he's acknowledged he's going to shoot the three more because he's actually a really good spot up shooter. I'm pretty sure he's over 40%. And yeah, I want to say he is. So like catch and shoot spot up threes. Alec's a really good shooter and he just doesn't shoot a lot. So that's another reason why having somebody to distribute like a Boris Diaw, like a Dante Exum is going to be great for the second unit. And it's not just Alec Burks, it's Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson's a really good spot up 3-point shooter. I think he's closer to mid 40s shooting, like 43% from three. So the Jazz are let me give an example. The Golden State Warriors last year, what made them so special was, yes, I know I'm comparing to the Jazz to a 73 win team. I get it. But just hear me out. Okay. What made them so special was that they would bring their bench in and would not slow down or change pace at all. They would play exactly the same, that high tempo game. It would just not, it was relentless. The Jazz are going to be pretty much the exact same thing, just in a different way, because, you know, we don't play like the Warriors do. We play our own style of basketball. But last year, our bench was just not good. They didn't get the job done, which is why it's so crazy that all of a sudden people are saying we have the best bench, because last year we very well could have had the worst. But now the Jazz have the ability to play the exact same way with the bench that they do with the starters, because you have that much talent on the bench. And even stretch the floor actually a bit more, because you have Trey Lyles out there instead of Derek Favors. So the Jazz bench is going to create some massive problems for people, because their bench is just fantastic. The Jazz are going to come at you in waves and waves of speed, of skill, and of size. It's a problem that people are going to have to deal with. And the reason I think the Jazz can contend this year, and yes, I'm talking about contending. The Jazz are by far and away a playoff team, but I'm talking about getting 1, 2, 3 rounds into the playoffs, because the Jazz create mismatches. And in the NBA, that's kind of what it's about. The Jazz don't have any superstars, but they have quality, talented players at every single position, and they have length at every single position. Now, not only can they guard every single team, but every single team is going to have to guard them. And that just, a lot of teams can't do that. And so, you know, the Jazz create mismatches. If, you know, it really depends on the draw. It depends on if they can get through that, you know, that Spurs hump, like I said. It depends on if they can learn to win down the stretch, like they showed an inability to do last year. If they can do that, the Jazz can contend this year. I can't remember what the odds, I think, what were the Jazz? Vegas came out with their odds, and it was not bad. I mean, for as much praise as the Jazz are getting, the Vegas odds are pretty good. I might, you know, I'm going down there with my friends next month. I might, you know, put a cheeky little bet down on the Jazz. You know, just some throwaway money. Disposable income, I guess. I hope my wife doesn't hear that. She might get very, very upset with me. But hey, if you can put $20 down on the Jazz and it's paying 80-1 odds, why not? You know? Why not? And I'm excited to see what the futures actually look like for the Jazz, what their total win total is. If it's anything under 50 games, you should take the over on the Jazz this year. I don't know. I don't know what it'll be. I bet you Vegas comes out with a line like 48.5, maybe. Maybe even lower. If it's lower, oh my goodness. Huh. Oh man. Anyway, I'm getting off the rails here. I don't think I really have anything left I want to say. It's August and I want the season to be here already, guys. I'm so, so excited. If you need your Jazz fill though, there are 4 players playing in the Rio Olympics. So, you know, go ahead and turn on those games, and they're actually all playing pretty well. Raul Neto's looking like he's getting a lot more confident. He's played very well with the Brazilian team. Boris Diaw is looking really, really good. And Rudy, most crucially, I think Rudy looks healthy, guys. He looks spry. He's getting up and down the floor. He's blocking shots. He's by far and away leading the Olympics in block shots. So, and he's also looking like he's gotten stronger. Now, he's still skinny. He's Rudy. I don't think he's going to put on a ton of weight, but he just looks stronger. So that's very good news. And then obviously, I mean, Joe Ingles has looked like Joe Ingles. You know what you're going to get from Joe, and he still looks very, very, very good. Moving the ball and doing a lot of good things for Australia. that was a fun game to watch them play the USA the other day. So yeah, if you need your basketball fix, there's that. And then, hey, just get hyped, get excited. Jazz are getting some love nationally, which is interesting because we never really have. So it's just new turf. We're breaking new grounds, guys. Oh man. But anyway, just a reminder, you can go subscribe to us on iTunes. Please, you know, give us 5 stars on there. That would help us kind of grow the show. It'd be really thoughtful of you to do so. And also, if you're on Android, we should be on pretty much every podcatcher, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn Radio. I'm trying to figure out how to get us on Spotify, because that would probably make it a lot easier as well. If there's anything you can, you know, any comments, any questions, please shoot me an email, BrianGonzalez21@gmail.com. I'll have the link for that in the description. And, you know, hey, tell a friend. Let's help this show get big. It's a podcast for you guys. It's a podcast made by fans, but it's strictly for fans. We'll probably try to get a podcast up in the next couple of weeks. We'll see what news pops up. But for now, my name is Brian Gonzalez. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of All That Jazz. I will catch you next time.